Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour, and today I'm going to be talking to one of the best in the SMSF business about a topic that never ceases to be of interest to our investors. Can I borrow through my SMSF and how? Or I'm thinking about starting an SMSF to borrow, and what can I do? It's an incredibly complex area, and more than 10 years after the legislation was introduced, many people are still really confused about this one. They get themselves into a lot of trouble, and the consequences can be really serious. I'm talking today with Meg Heffron of Heffron SMSF Solutions. So Heffron is the business that Meg co-founded nearly two decades ago. It's been providing SMSF administration services for at least that long, right? And it means that the business deals with all the tax accounting and compliance for thousands and thousands of SMSFs every year. They deal with many, many accountants, financial planners, and trustees, including my husband and I. They have seen it all, and they know what goes on in this particular area. Meg's a highly sought after expert in self-managed super funds. She's hugely knowledgeable. She was actually one of just eight people who formed the Cooper Review Panel into superannuation that the government commissioned a few years ago. She was the only woman and the sole representative of the SMSF sector, which is a third of the superannuation sector, so a third of the couple of trillion dollars that is now in super. Meg, it's great to have you here.
Thanks, Gemma.
So there's not much you haven't seen, which was the point of that big spiel, over the years that you've been dealing with self-managed super funds. Are the borrowing rules still the area that cause the most concern?
I think they are, Gemma, and you're right. They've been around for 10 years, and yet, and just recently, we've had some major superannuation changes, which dominated the airwaves for about 18 months. Mm-hmm. But despite all that, I would still say that it won't be long before borrowing returns to being the top topic of confusion.
Yeah, the number one issue that people get themselves into trouble with. So prior to 2007, self-managed super funds just weren't really permitted to borrow. It was only in really extreme circumstances, and obviously pre-99, different scenario again. But they could really only invest in something that was internally geared, like a geared share fund, that sort of thing. And then the legislation changed. So late 2007 legislation changed. Can you tell us how it changed and why?
Yeah, so back in 2007 and probably even earlier, there were a lot of funds, including SMSFs, that invested in financial products called instalment warrants. Mm. Now, instalment warrants, not all instalment warrants are the same. They've got different legal structures, and so some were perfectly fine in super funds. But there were some popular products at the time that probably crossed the line and technically included a borrowing.
Right.
So that was a problem. That was illegal at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that almost to legitimise an existing practice, the government introduced new legislation to allow for them. And in fact, in the legislation, it even had the heading at the time, instalment warrants, indicating that it was very clearly targeting that type of products. So that all happened in September 2007, at a time when the government was also making huge tax changes. So I'd say it actually almost slipped by unnoticed for a year or two. I remember writing articles at the time saying, you know what, these new instalment warrant rules actually allow a super fund to borrow to invest. I wonder if anyone will actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
And funnily enough, given that I was talking about this in the middle of the GFC, nobody actually did it.
Yeah, right. So I was giving presentations around the same time we'd finally got through all the 2007 super changes, which were pretty massive. And I was giving presentations in September 2007 saying, there is this change and it's huge. What I think is most interesting about it, so when the legislation was introduced, it comes with an explanatory memorandum. So basically plain English on what the legislation means. And in it, they gave examples of borrowing to buy property, borrowing to buy shares. They gave the example, do you remember this, of borrowing to buy artwork. And I remember just going, yeah, clearly you're not just talking about instalment warrants when they're the examples you gave. But people, I think, took a long time to come to it. And also nobody reads the explanatory memorandum apart from me, apparently. So nearly 11 years since the legislation changed. What's happened? You know, how many people have borrowed? Has it really had a big impact?
Yeah, look, so the latest official stats for the ATO from the ATO are actually back to June 2016, so not perfect. But They indicated back then that about 9% of SMSFs had at least some borrowings.
Wow.
And that the total amount was about 3% of total superfund assets. Yeah. So, you know, that's 1 in 10 funds borrowing.
That's really surprising. So, you know, $20 billion they're talking about there. It's not three quarters of funds, but that's a significant part of the market.
And growing, and I think that's why it gets looked at so often, because back in 2012 it was only 4%, so it's kind of, relatively speaking, more than doubled in that four-year period. Look, I doubt it's ever going to be a... It's not going to ever be something that every SMSF does.
Right, no.
But I think, you know, definitely it gets... airtime because it is growing so quickly.
Yeah, right, okay. So from my experience, it does seem to be one of the big drivers for people who are thinking about setting up an SMSF. And I'll make another statement, which is that many people who feel priced out of the property market in Sydney or Melbourne, where obviously prices have run really hard and can't afford to borrow to buy in their own name, suddenly look at their super and go, I could get into the market that way. Suddenly there is a pile of cash sitting there that I could use to access this market. Do you find that you get the same experience? Are you doing the administration for a large number of funds who are going down this path?
Look, I think you're right. I think it's a motivator to set up, or at least to think about setting up. So I'd love to see the stats. You know, it's all very well saying 1 in 10 have borrowings. Yeah. I wonder if it's a much higher proportion of new funds.
Of course, rather than
incumbents. I think the other interesting thing, you're so right about people in Sydney and Melbourne feeling priced out of the property market. Not only do they have a sizable chunk of funds in their SMSF, because if you're in your 40s, you and your spouse have been in compulsory super for 20 years or for your whole working life. Mm. So not only do they have a sizable chunk for a deposit there, but it's also where a lot of their future cash flow is going. So everybody has to put nearly 10% of their salary in every single year on a tax preferred basis. That's not a bad spot from which to be paying off a mortgage. So I would say that it's definitely a motivator to have a conversation about setting up. Interestingly, I think our administration practice is probably more reflective of the community as a whole. You know, we wouldn't have even 10%, I don't think, of our funds with borrowings, but we would definitely have more conversations about borrowings with new people setting up.
Okay. So you've seen the full evolution of this market, and clearly in that time you've seen the mistakes that people make. So we've talked about it as, you know, what people are actually doing. But let's start from the top. It is a complex area, and people are not always aware of the restrictions that apply, right? It's not the same as borrowing to buy any old property. It's not the same as negative gearing in your own name. What's the biggest mistake that people make that you find?
Look, I reckon the biggest one, and this will sound really crazy because it's such a simple thing to get right, is doing things in the wrong order.
Right.
So the number of times we'll have a call on Monday morning saying, I went to an auction on Saturday and I bought a property. Mm-hmm. I'm going to borrow through my SMSF to buy it. I haven't set up my SMSF yet. So that is just so the wrong order that it should never happen. It's one of the biggest mistakes I think people make. World of pain when it comes to fixing that, and sometimes it can't be fixed.
I was going to say, I'm astonished you imply that it can be fixed in that scenario, because so let's explain what's gone wrong there. You've bought it in your personal name, right? When you make that deposit and you've signed that paperwork, it is in your name. You don't have a superfund at that point in time.
Well, and how can you even argue that the superfund trustee made the decision, which is the trustee's responsibility to buy the property? So, yes, world of pain. Do not do things in the wrong order.
Set the
fund up first.
But also, an SMSF cannot acquire a residential property from a member of the fund. So they can't acquire the fund from you at a later date by borrowing to do it.
No. So you've really got to do some fancy footwork on that contract.
Right.
But like I said, Just don't do it in the wrong order. Set the fund up first.
Yes.
Get your bank and all your documentation lined up first, and then go to the auction.
Ensure that the deposit is in the SMSF, and therefore the cheque that you write is from the SMSF, not in your personal. Right, okay. So step number one, make sure your SMSF is set up and ready to transact before you go to an auction or even think about it. Do you think that's simply ignorance? Do you think it's negligence? I'm assuming that one's not a willful flouting of the rules, right?
Oh, gosh, no. I think people just get excited at auctions. I think people very... In fact, I would say across the SMSF universe generally, people very rarely go into these things intending to flout the rules.
Right.
In fact, people are almost overly concerned the other way. They feel that a guillotine is going to come down on their neck if they even look sideways at the wrong investment. So,
yeah.
I think, in fact, it's generally just not knowing what the rules are or misunderstanding what it really means to commit an SMSF to purchasing a property.
Okay, right. So, clear steps to take though: set up your SMSF, roll all your funds in, or make the contributions you want to make, then start looking for something to buy.
Yes.
Okay. So, let's assume they've got that right. What's next?
I'd say the next biggest mistake is misunderstanding what can be done with the property once the SMSF owns it. So this is assuming the actual purchase process is all worked out fine.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with getting this wrong is that sometimes it just completely undermines the reasons you were doing it in the first place. So we've seen some really sad cases where the client had a very clear plan in mind. They were going to buy the property with a loan, borrow more money later to develop or renovate it, then sell and look at fantastic profits flowing through to their retirement savings.
Mm-hmm.
All perfectly sensible planning, except it's illegal. So,
right. Yeah.
Unfortunate bit, that one.
Straight up illegal.
Yeah, there are some pretty tight rules around SMSF borrowing, and they limit not just the type of loan product you can get, but even what you can do with the asset that you're borrowing to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those rules is that while the loan's ongoing, you actually can't fundamentally change the property. So major developments or subdividing are out. You can't do those until the loan's been paid off.
Mm.
So even if you can do those, you can't borrow to do it.
Yep.
So all the things you might think of as being perfectly normal when you're borrowing to buy an asset in your own name are just illegal in a super fund.
Okay. That's absolutely critical, because the question I get very frequently is, look, I'm thinking about setting up an SMSF to do some property development, and you're like, I can't even begin to tell you how you can't do that.
that's a no. Unless you have a heck of a lot of money and you don't need to borrow.
Yeah, if you've got $20 million, fine, go for it. Although you've got all sorts of other issues now with caps and so on. I do, and people sort of tend to think that maybe you're not correct, or that, you know, that can't be right, though. You know, of course I can do that.
Especially since I think people know that the fundamental principle of super is you're saving for your retirement, you have to do sensible things, and all of this is sensible.
Yeah.
It's just illegal.
Yeah, it's just not possible. Okay. And it's good to be very explicit. It's not possible.
Yes.
There may be incredibly unique scenarios where you can pull this off, but they are so far at the margin, let's assume they're not possible.
Yes.
Yeah.
The typical SMSF investor today can borrow, buy a property, but they pretty much, they then pay it off. They pretty much, they can't develop it, even if they want to do some significant changes that don't fundamentally change the nature of the property. They can't borrow to do that. They have to do it with the super fund's own money. So understanding all of that and making sure that the plans you have for the SMSF borrowing fit that is essential. And as I said, we've seen some pretty sad cases where people are already locked in.
Yeah.
They've found the property. They've bought the property. They've taken out the loan, and then when they come to do what they really bought it for, they can't.
Yeah. When you think about the cost of stamp duty and so many other things, that's a world of hurt, as you say. Okay, so what about the third thing? We're going for five. What's the third thing?
Pressure.
Yeah.
Third thing. Okay. Look, probably not thinking enough about how changes to super law or even external events might affect the borrowing. I'll just give you one example there. You know, any kind of borrowing, including an SMSF borrowing, has to be serviced. You have to pay the interest and you have to pay down the capital.
Yes.
So that requires new money coming in. So what a lot of people do is depend on both the revenue from the property, say, and new contributions coming in.
Yes.
to pay down that loan. But in the last 10 years, we've seen enormous changes in the rules around how much an individual can contribute to super.
Yes.
Even as recently as 2007, everything's gone down again.
Yeah.
So somebody who locked into a really long-term arrangement like a loan suddenly discovers they've got plenty of money actually to pay the loan off. They're just not allowed to put it into super, which is where it must be. So I'd probably that's just one example of a group of problems, which is not thinking enough about how things might be different in the future and how to future-proof, I guess, the arrangement first. Yeah.
So I'll throw in number four then on that one. In terms of the external environment, the regulator has very clearly decided, this is APRA, that lenders need to be far more careful in this space. So what banks were willing to do 5 years ago or 10 years ago is very different to what banks are willing to do now. And that's not necessarily of their own volition. They've been told by the regulator that they need to be much more cautious. And you may find that that your usual bank actually doesn't offer lending at all.
That's right. And you could be, in fact, already in discussions with your usual bank. Mm. And they're used to being able to meet all of your lending needs. Mm. And nobody's mentioned to them that you're doing this particular one through an SMSF.
Right.
You think you've got your finance all lined up and then, oh no, sorry, we don't actually have a product for residential property. You can only buy commercial property using our limited recourse borrowing or LRBA for SMSFs.
Yeah. So it's probably a really good point. You know, if you are thinking about doing this, be very explicit with anyone you're talking to that it's through an SMSF and that's what you're trying to do. Okay, so we're probably going to get into some of the less common mistakes now, but these ones obviously do have consequences. What's next?
Well, actually, I think you've already mentioned this really, but I want to highlight it again just in case. That's making sure the SMSF pays the deposit. So it's all very well to get everything sorted in the right order. The SMSF's created first and then you buy and so your other structures and then you buy the property. But even as going as far as making sure the SMSF actually pays the deposit. Now, that means the SMSF has to have some money in it. Yeah. If you're depending on that money coming from your other super, you need to allow some lead time to get your other super into your SMSF so that you're ready to pay the deposit. Yeah. It's absolutely critical.
Okay. Right, finally.
One last one. Mm-hmm. Okay, I thought you were going to let me off the hook there because you provided a fourth.
Yeah, no, we're up to six.
Look, I think maybe... maybe this last one. We often see people coming unstuck when they say, okay, I've done all my research. I'm going to start, I'm going to do some borrowing through my SMSF. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get an SMSF set up over here because they've got the cheapest setup process. I'm going to use this provider over here to do my ongoing administration. I'll talk to my bank and sort of a disparate group of professionals now are involved in this one transaction. It's actually quite tricky to do that. Mm. It might sound cheaper in the early days, but there's always some interdependency between that documentation. So you might think it's good to get your documentation for your for the trusts you need to borrow through a super fund done in one place, but the setup of the super fund done in another. But if the two documents are then inconsistent, world of pain.
Right.
Similarly, you want your bank to know exactly who you're using to set up your fund because different banks, and trust me, every bank has a different set of clauses they want in a trust deed.
Yes.
If the person setting up your fund doesn't know that, you'll end up setting it up and then the bank will say, no, 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 go and change that. There's nothing actually wrong with the trust deed, but it doesn't have the precise bits that that bank wants.
Yeah, okay.
So again, probably my final tip would be, yes, getting the group of people doing the work coordinated so that everybody is working on the same transaction, pulling in the same direction, rather than each person doing their little bit.
Yeah, right, okay. And particularly if you're the person trying to coordinate them all, but you don't have, very few of us do, the expertise to manage all of those different components.
Yes, and look, we'd be crazy if we did, wouldn't we? I wouldn't want to become an expert in every single thing that I needed to know about in my in my personal life. I would want to be able to depend on somebody else to do the heavy lifting.
To do all those complex areas. So many areas that people can trip up, and clearly, as you say, very few people are doing this with any intention of doing something wrong. It's a fundamental ignorance of some of the rules, which are very complex. Others are a reflection of really just how tricky some of them are and the fact that they change and the external environment changes as well. How do people make sure they get it right? How do you work around this stuff?
Look, I think I know I'm sounding like a broken record here, but I would probably say I would get advice up front.
Yes.
And I would have somebody coordinating all of the various players involved to make sure they're all working together.
Mm-hmm. I will add one caveat to that. I think it's really important. So I think the advice up front is essential. You want to be dealing with someone who can give you high quality advice around what's possible, whether it's right for you, how it's going to work and all of those things. But be a bit cautious if someone offers to do everything for you, including choose the property. There are some areas, and the regulators have flagged these, where the property developer is working with the financial planner, who's working with the accountant, who's working with whomever else, and where you see it all wrapped up and the property is served to you on a platter, it's possible that there may be additional costs factored into the price of the property that you haven't anticipated. So perhaps don't.
Pays to be cynical?
Pays to be a bit cynical if everything is done for you, right?
Fair enough.
And that is true whether it's inside super or outside super. Just have a look at those ones closely. There have been some newspaper stories about it and so on. So if you want to learn more, you can certainly have a look at and find some areas where people have flagged risks around property prices being inflated when they're being sold through these types of arrangements. If you want to do it for a property you've got in mind, go and talk to someone who can talk to you about that rather than packaging the whole thing. Meg, thank you so much for your time today. Crazy complex area. Great to see what can go wrong, and also for people to feel confident that there are experts in this field who are actually really good at it, done it many times before. It obviously works for the vast majority of the trustees you do work for, right?
Look, it does. And actually, there have been plenty of trustees who've had great success stories borrowing to buy property, because as we've already said, that's where a lot of their wealth is. It's not a crazy idea for that to be the cornerstone of other wealth creation strategies like gearing.
Yeah, right. So it sounds like we've just said it's all too hard, don't do it. That's not what we're saying, but it is very hard. Make sure you're getting the right advice and the right services. If people want to know more about you and your services, where do they go?
Probably the easiest thing is to Google Heffron, which is HEFFRON. Or go to our website, www.heffron.com.au.
Okay, fantastic. And if you would like to access Heffron services via NAB, we do have a special arrangement with you guys. So you can go to nab.com.au/smsf or nabtrade.com.au/smsf, and you will get lots of high quality information about SMSF in general, some videos and podcasts and all those sorts of things, but also a referral through to you guys. If you are thinking about borrowing through a self-managed super fund, there are plenty of great resources out there, so you're not alone. It's not impossible. It is possible to do. The ATO and the ASIC websites are both very good. They've got some really good info. The ATO is very making great strides in trying to help people in this area, because they obviously see everything that goes wrong. You can also go speak to a financial planner. There are financial planners and accountants who have specialist qualifications in self-managed super funds who are listed on the SMSF Association website. So you can Google that and find people who've got specialist qualifications to help you in these sorts of areas. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Gemma Dale, and we look forward to talking to you again on Your Wealth.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.